Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
There's the full-time whistle. Listen to the reaction of the Chelsea fans, because Manchester United are the latest to take a wrecking ball to Sarri ball. United bounce back from their Champions League loss and further deflate Chelsea, who are starting to lose big game after big game. The Carabao Cup final live on TalkSport is now vitally important for Maurizio Sarri, if he gets the chance to take it. It's finished at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 0, Manchester United 2.
It's the Premier League preview show for week 27 of the 18-19 season. Is it too late to say you're sorry, or should that be sorry, but you're fired? The style of football nobody in England has seen work reached another low point as Chelsea got knocked out the FA Cup on Monday. Now it's a rematch against Manchester City in the Carabao Cup final, having already lost to Guardiola's men at Wembley this season and being thumped just a fortnight ago by the Citizens. In the league, it's rare Man United and Liverpool doesn't get top billing, and although it's another big game for the ever-improving Red Devils, it's all eyes on Liverpool trying to retake top spot and end the recent spate of disappointing draws, including in the Champions League in midweek. That's the two top matches on this show, but there's plenty more to get into. I'm Tom Rennie, and this is the Premier League Preview Show. Right, let's say hello to our panel, shall we? Let's start with a man sitting on a very low chair today and a microphone which is, I would say, not high enough for him. Maybe they thought we were getting a borrower in, I'm not sure. TalkSport's football editor, David Walker, is here.
You know what would be perfect, actually, in this situation?
Go on.
And we do have one in the building.
Go on.
Is it a Bielsa bucket?
That's very true. Why aren't we using the bucket today? We should pause the recording and get that done. That's fantastic. This might hurt your back, so we'll try and get this show done quickly and wittily today, all right? Good to see you as ever. Also with us on the programme, two of our resident Premier League preview show experts. We'll start with a man who's also on a low seat today. Oh, no, he's not. It's the former Manchester United fullback, Paul Parker. You all right, pal?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm calling that heightism.
Yeah, OK, fine. I'm happy with that. I'm a heightist. Also with us, a moderately tall man, former West Ham and Watford and a few others, of course, striker, Republic of Ireland international, Feyenoord man, all of that. David Connolly's here. You okay?
I'm very good, you?
You happy with your seat?
Yes, very happy.
Okay, good. I'm happy. Speaking of seats, will Maurizio Sarri still be in his seat this weekend by the time we get to the Carabao Cup final? It's Sunday, 4:30 UK time, Chelsea against Manchester City. Paul, let's come to you first on this. A manager under immense pressure, Maurizio Sarri, against Man United on Monday. It's a game we were covering internationally. Dave was at the game as well. It was bizarre that in that second half we had the audible Sarri ball. We had the perennial substitution of Kovacic for Barkley. So a great line, which was, if Maurizio Sarri had a fourth substitution, he would have brought Barkley back on for Kovacic. Like, he seems to do it every game in the 70th minute. And then late on, he's got Giroud, Hudson-Odoi. We're going out the cup and he changed the right backs over. What was going on Monday? Why was that second half for Chelsea so dead?
I wish I could really answer that question. And if I was correct, then I maybe might give it a go at management. But no one really knows what he's doing, in the sense of, didn't make sense to me to take off Pedro to bring on Willian. Why is he's doing everything which is exactly the same, which anybody could really do. But people saying about it's not working is Sarri ball. What exactly is Sarri ball? I mean, unless you watch Napoli regularly, you haven't really got a clue what it's meant to be. I see this, supposed to be this fast attacking. I see Jorginho play, and disappointing, really disappointing. He's got the best player maybe in the world in that position in Kante, and he's playing him out of a position, square peg round hole scenario. Yet Kante's doing a good job, but he's not doing what he's really good at, which he's not been allowed to do. And if he'd have been in his position on that Monday night, things would have, could have been a little bit different in that midfield.
Tracking back Herrera for the first goal.
Yeah, the whole
tracking
thing
Pogba for the second.
The whole thing could have been a lot better in that midfield, because we saw United against PSG in that midfield, Matic and Herrera together, and they struggled with the movement and the passing of PSG. With Chelsea, they didn't. They found it easier. They got close. Herrera, you'd have to say, maybe was the best, maybe one of the best players on the pitch. He's mostly, for me, his best performance over 90 minutes in a Manchester United shirt. I've totally put out everything that he'd done before Ole Gunnar, everything before him, because he was playing a game which wasn't Manchester United. It was all itty-bitty and very, very, very... It wasn't nice. Some
niggly, nasty little player.
It wasn't
Mourinho player.
Yeah, I didn't want to say his name.
Oh, but, I've done it, haven't I?
Yeah.
That's a fine for me now. It's 50p I owe.
But he's coming as a player now, and he's going to sign a new contract.
But to be fair, though, David Connolly, if you're making Ander Herrera look like a world-class player all of a sudden, there's something going wrong at your club. So take away from Jorginho and Kante. We know that as a thing. We've identified it. Everyone's identified it except Sarri. What else is wrong at Chelsea? It can't just be one player's out of position, so it's all gone wrong.
Well, I mean, I covered the game for TalkSport against Malmo, and actually they did okay, Chelsea, but obviously they're against much weaker opponents. But even Malmo knew to go and press Chelsea when they had the ball at the back. You know, they didn't sit off. I mean, they felt that they were there for the taking. Look, Kepa, for example, to me, is not the goalkeeper that I don't think everyone else thinks. Yeah. Some of the goals he let in against Man City, I think he should have prevented. He's not as good with the ball at his feet than Edison, for example. So I think they're actually weaker there in goal than what they were previously. They're not as good building up at the back. Everyone talks about Kante and Jorginho, but you know, it's quite important because, you know, he does keep the ball a lot, and that's how Sarri likes to play, but he doesn't really progress up the pitch. That's the problem. And look, the two wingers play off opposite feet, so they're always coming inside into traffic. You're never going to deliver the ball in the box. Sometimes I look at whether it's Giroud or Higuain, the ball isn't really going to come unless they thread it through the eye of a needle, which is fine against Huddersfield because that's what's happened, but against better sides it hasn't really. And I think United were too powerful, had too much pace, too much athleticism, and just ran all over Chelsea in midfield. Look, Kovacic is great with the ball, Jorginho is great with the ball, you know, but they're not great without the ball. The only best player they got in front of that back four is Kante, and he's not there.
Can I ask you, Dave Walker, about the crowd on Monday? Doing the commentary of the game, it was obviously quite difficult to assess exactly what was happening with the crowd. I didn't quite notice the Sarri ball chants. What was it like when the Kovacic-Barkley move happened? What was the Sarri ball chant like? Was it loud? Was it everybody?
There was uproar when that substitution happened again. And it was, you could see, everyone knew it was going to happen. And they were waiting for it to happen so they could all get up and start shouting expletives at Sarri and groaning, and there was people leaving. And the atmosphere was a strange one on Monday. Obviously, being an FA Cup game, you had the entire shed end was filled with Manchester United fans who were singing for the whole match in great voice, as they always are away from home. And the Chelsea fans, you know, they're gone. They clearly have lost faith in Sarri. They're not happy, and they were joining in with "you're getting sacked in the morning" chants.
Because last year, when they were losing, they were still saying "Antonio" the whole game. But this is not that, is it? There is no goodwill that you can audibly hear.
No,
I think with Antonio, you've got to remember he changed formation, Antonio, to try and find a way out. Do you remember? I think it was after the Arsenal game, and he changed from a 4 to a 3, and obviously he found a way out. You know, but obviously Sarri's not for turning, and his stubbornness, I think, is it's going to cost him. Look. Eden Hazard is out of that club in the summer. He's 100%, in my opinion, gone. And I think they've blown it. I do, because I think they're going to lose arguably one of the best players they've had for years. They lost Diego Costa, their 9. They're going to lose their 10. And, you know, even signing like Pulisic, they can't use him till the summer. What good is that? I mean, he'll be out of a job in the summer, I think.
Before that.
Yeah. Well, let's look ahead to this Sunday. What about Maurizio Sarri losing his job by the end of Sunday, Monday morning? What would the result need to be against Man City for him to stay? And not just winning the trophy,
they've
I suppose, playing well?
If they're going to get beat, we have to turn and say there's they're going to get beat. You can't really see them winning, but they've got to compete and they can't be embarrassed. They've got to be within a margin, within a decent margin if they get beat. It can't be any, even 50% of what they got beat at the Etihad will cost him his job. The fans are not going to stand for it. And as we know, Chelsea are the Real Madrid of English football in sacking managers. Mm. Obviously, they're lacking the history of Real Madrid, but that's what they are as a club when it comes to managers.
I think as well, you've got to remember the Community Shield, Chelsea didn't lay a glove on City. No. Not a glove. And if this is anything less than 3-0 to City, I'll be so surprised. I think it's going to be the most one-sided final you've seen in ages. Because City, I think, are playing arguably the best football in Europe.
They've just got themselves going as well from their little bit of a bad spell, City. Yep. Liverpool had an opportunity to get away from them. They blew it. And I just think they've allowed City to recoup, get their players back, and now they're starting to get together again.
And if you go back to that game as well, they've obviously played games since. They just cut through Chelsea. And I don't see any progression from that game to where Chelsea are now.
Well, you haven't got to go back to the Community Shield for that.
Of course.
Go back 2 weeks for that.
But my point
is,
they've
scored 4 in 20 minutes against them.
Exactly. But my point is, nothing changed from that game to obviously then. You know, I don't see any discernible improvement.
No. And now they'll have a big decision to make if they do lose this cup final convincingly. Because they've got Spurs the following game. And you might look at it and say, OK, we'll give until the Spurs game, we'll see how that one goes. But also, you could look at it the other way and think, actually, we want to give ourselves a chance of getting something out of this game. So, thank you very much. But then who next?
And also, I think he's talking himself out of a job.
I agree.
You know, the things he says, you know, you've got to be careful. You know, confusion. You know, the players aren't carrying out what I'm telling
lack
them.
Lack of motivation.
Lack of motivation. Well, I tell you what, if you can't, you know, that's what you're paid to do. So,
but could Gianfranco Zola, could Eddie Newton, could Gus Hiddink, which I think Chris Sutton was talking about earlier this week, do a better job? Gus Hiddink's 72 years of age now.
Yeah, but again,
could he come back in again and save Chelsea?
Would that be the third time he would have come back?
It would be, yeah.
I think that one's done its time, to be honest. I don't think even the fans would want that now. The fans,
Zola? Would you be happy with Zola?
Zola's as an ex-player, yes, but then even then the fans would look at Zola's opportunities as when he's had the opportunities as a manager, he hasn't cut it. He's even said it himself with jobs. I think, was it at Watford? I think, was that his last job at Watford?
West Ham, he said, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, but I think one of them he's actually said himself he just couldn't really do it.
The last job he had was at Birmingham.
Was it Birmingham?
Yes.
Thank you, David.
And it did go spectacularly wrong there. He's a man who's resigned more than once. He's an honest man and knows when he can't do what he wants to do, he'll resign. But I think if he do get to the situation where Sarri goes, he would obviously be the first man they'd have to put in there immediately. And whether you want to have him for a longer period or than just a couple of games is another question. But you know, you've got Lampard's being talked about. The fans would like to see him back, but he's only just started at Derby. He probably... It would be a hard decision for him.
Wouldn't go now as well.
It would be a hard
Derby
decision.
In the
you
mix.
Might not want to go there yet. You might want to go to Chelsea when you're ready, when he feels he's ready. But it obviously would be a real difficult decision for him to make. He'd probably, his heart would say he'd want to do it. His head might say otherwise.
I mean, would he really turn that down?
Well, that's it.
I don't think he would. I mean,
probably
look,
not. But
why can't he be a Kenny Dalglish, for example, or someone like
or
that?
A
you know, or a Solskjaer. Yeah. You know, so a former player. And you've got to remember, John Terry's now in coaching as well at Villa.
He was there on Monday, I think.
He was there on Monday.
He was, shaking a few hands.
It wouldn't surprise me. Would not surprise me if some sort of, you know, duo or, you know, obviously, you know, Jody Morris is there as well. Former players that get the fans on side. And, you know, you've got to remember, they've had a lot of foreigners as managers for a long time, haven't they? A couple of Italians. And it'd be nice to maybe have someone British there.
Yeah, but I think that might work better as a number two or something initially, rather than a number one. Mm. And the Ole Gunnar is a completely different scenario because the clubs are different in the way they've done things and the way they do things. Yeah. And I think with Chelsea and with the owner as well, I just think to bring that back, I think it's going to... That could be a horror show.
Do you not think, though, that the Chelsea board or whoever's in charge, you know, might be looking at United and going, well, actually, that's working for them, all right. Mm. You know, employing someone a bit less glamorous, but he was a player. Why don't we go down that route? Every other route.
They might be, but I think I know we've got to wrap up. But I think that another question I want to ask is, what happens if he wins this cup final?
Yes, that is such a good question.
Because really,
if he beats Man City 3-0 on Sunday,
does that make everything okay? Or if you've lost confidence in the man, if the players have lost confidence in the man, on any given day, a football match could go one way and they could end up winning it. It's unlikely, but they could end up winning it somehow on Sunday. But the problems that are still there, they're not just going to vanish overnight, are
they?
This
is a great point, because Antonio Conte wanted to get rid of four or five of the first team. We know that he wanted to get rid of loads of these guys he thought were bad influences in the dressing room. We know Willian was one of those people, but there are others as well. He wanted to make five or six changes. This is last summer. Get rid of this lot, bring in this lot, bring in different types of people. All the squad is basically the same. Apart from Jorginho, Higuain and the keeper, it's the same team, pretty much. So would it not help Chelsea, even if they lost this weekend, to back this manager to the end of this season, maybe give him next season as well? He's a project manager, and allow him to have the 6, 7, 8 squad changes and get rid of what is clearly a whole bunch of bad apples.
Well, possibly. I think, you know, arguably they've had opportunities to make some signings in the January window. It didn't really happen, apart from, you know, Pulisic, where you can't use him. Will they give him longer? I don't think. Even if they won this cup final, you know, winning something didn't necessarily prevent them sacking Di Matteo, for example.
Conte as well. Conte. Last game was the cup final, yeah. Wasn't it?
So I don't think that's going to keep him in a job. I've just got a feeling that they've lost confidence in him, regardless.
We shall see. Man City this weekend, probably one of the toughest games that anyone can have in football right now. They go into it big favourites, of course. Really love to see Phil Foden play some of this game. I know it was only Newport last weekend, but both goals he scored were fantastic. And the third goal, just as Newport got back into it, the Ammon goal, like within seconds, they just turned a switch, scored a great goal, and then shut it down again. I thought he was fantastic, and it was a very professional job. I just want to see him play in a game like this. I think most people kind of do. Got to move on, though. In the next section of the show, I want to talk about a game that, bizarrely, isn't our top story this week, and it's Man U against Liverpool. That's next. Right, let's get to it. Man U against Liverpool. Sunday, 2:05 UK time kickoff. Man United through in the FA Cup. Last week, of course, Monday night beating Chelsea. Liverpool, disappointing draw against Bayern Munich on Tuesday in the Champions League. Jurgen Klopp said it's not a game that those who were there will remember in years to come. They did struggle against a very well-drilled defensive Bayern Munich side, a side that are Champions League veterans. 8 times they've got out of this stage in the last 10 years, so it was always going to be a tough old game. How will they react to that disappointment, Paul, against a Man United side this weekend away from home, who themselves are going through a great resurgence and are a very good side at the moment?
I would say they're reacting in a positive way because it's another big game. A lot of animosity there. I think that's a bit of an understatement, that one. But this game has suddenly grown even bigger now because Ole Gunnar's there, Manchester United are winning games of football. They've had a good performance and a good result in their previous game. Everything is made for this game. It's just a shame it's happening around that League Cup as well. So maybe that's taken, the League Cup has taken a little bit of it away, which is, you don't often say that about the League Cup. But it's a big, big game. So many people have asked me for tickets. Normally people just know themselves, well, don't bother asking.
You got any?
No. Not at the moment.
Not even for preview show friends.
But it's a game which
everyone
wants to see at this moment in time, and I make them right because this game could be really a good game of football. Yeah. I'm more looking forward to it now than what I would have been two months ago.
And it's one of the games that Liverpool will be looking at, and that they will be confident, I'm sure, of being able to get a result to win the game. But it's one of their biggest hurdles. They've got potential bumps in the road they've got for the rest of the season if you come in the Premier League. Man City are, as we've said, they're motoring on now. They put the pressure on. They got back top of the league. Liverpool, their position has slipped. And this is a game they could lose.
What about this spate of draws Liverpool are having? It's 3 draws in their last 4 games, 2 in the league, 1 in the Champions League. Did beat Bournemouth in the Premier League by 3-0. Can we take anything from that they may be reacting to the pressure of being top? Maybe they're reacting to the pressure of City taking their spot? Or all their games won, they are Premier League champions, but they've started to not win.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, look, they had a good 10 days break before this game, which a lot of clubs would have wanted, you know, to refresh your mind, refresh your body. But actually, it looked like it was maybe a bit too long. You know, as it is, they went away. I think they got some sun on their backs. Difficult game. Obviously, Bayern weren't going to be easy. You know, against Leicester, for example, they gave away far too many fouls. I thought they were naive, knowing that Leicester have got real height and a real threat of set pieces, and they just gave away so many needless free kicks, and they looked vulnerable from set pieces. Obviously, the West Ham game as well. I don't think they've been playing at the top or the peak of their powers, but I think, you know, a couple of draws there is not the worst result. However, you've got to remember, Tottenham are really in this. Now, if Liverpool slip up here, you know, Tottenham can take full advantage, and then if they win, they're only 2 points behind them. So, you know, this is a massive game, and you've got to remember, the reverse game, United were absolutely awful. They only had the ball, I think, 30% of the time. Pogba was on the bench, Martial was on the bench. This is a completely different animal. It's going to be a great game, an absolutely great game, and I wouldn't be surprised if United do turn them over, just in the form that they're in.
Do you think Liverpool rest a few players from the game midweek? So Jordan Henderson unlikely to be able to play two in a row in a very short space of time. The front three not quite firing. Maybe Divock Origi gets a start and Firmino drops out. We see that sub quite a lot later.
No. It can't be. You're not going to start with Origi. Surely that, if you're a Liverpool fan, you wouldn't accept that. Your priority is to beat Manchester United, because a certain person who's a Liverpool fan who works on Sky said if Liverpool beat Manchester United, they're going to win the league. That's what he's come out and said. You play what's in front. If you're Jordan Henderson and you're going to accept to be left out because you can't play two games inside of so many days, what a load of rubbish that is. It's Manchester United, it's a derby game. You play in those games. And yourself, if you was to go and win that game as a player, you think to yourself, it's another step nearer to winning a league, to getting a medal. So you're going to want to play and be involved because people will talk about it. And one thing about footballers is that you're there for the right reasons, you want to play in every single big game, because there's nothing better than feeling that you've been there. More importantly, you've won that game as well.
I think psychologically, you know, this is sort of tipped a little bit now, because Liverpool are on a bit of a downer. Klopp's been saying it wasn't the result they wanted, you know, whereas United are on a real up, you know, just beating Chelsea in really good form, come back from the PSG game. So I got a feeling actually the scales have just tipped, you know, favourably in United's favour, and I think they might be able to do him here.
And then looking at, then when I was at the West Ham Liverpool game at the London Stadium, and the way Klopp, and I watched, I was just looking at Klopp, and he was, every situation, he was at the fourth official all the time, which I can't stand people who do that, because at the end of the day, he's not going to change anything. So why are you bothering? Why are you wasting your time with him? Talk to your players and your coaching staff. There's better people to talk to. You can get something positive from them. And you can just see it now. He was moaning even after the game. He never accepted that, you know, that he drew the game. When he looks at it, he scored a goal which is 100% offside. They had a goal at the end. They had an opportunity at the end which was offside, but we don't know whether or not that would have been given because the referee blew the whistle. And they've just about got over the line against a West Ham side who really went for it. But he had excuses. And I just think that's wrong sometimes, because all you're doing is filling players' head with excuses as well. If you're positive, your players will be positive with you if you're saying the right things. If you start making excuses, us footballers, we jump on the back of them after a while, because it's a get out for us.
I always wonder why managers don't hire an assistant just to shout at, like a Mr. Burns Smithers situation, to stop them shouting at the fourth official. Just have someone there they can always have a go at.
I think he's the worst, Klopp. I think him and his staff are one of the worst I've seen in the Premier League. Certainly, this is
the fourth official.
Yeah, they are non-stop. You know, colleagues, I'm sure Paul knows people who maybe played against him or come up against him. They said it is non-stop.
Does it work?
Well, I think it does work. I think actually you grind them down and you start to get decisions going your way.
I sometimes work on a negative, that one. If you're going to keep at somebody, in the end they're going to go, well, I'm going to go the other way. Like referees, if someone's ordered, they think all the time, I talk to the referee, I'll get in it, he's going to give me something, and then we get something. I think, because if someone, you're walking down the road and you bump into someone, you pester him, in the end, in a while, he's going to suddenly go, I'm just put one on you.
Is this from personal experience, Paul?
Not at all, because I'm not like that. I'm a nice fella.
Are you the bickerer or the swinger? Which one of those are
you? I'm definitely not a swinger. I'm definitely not that. I'm one of them. I might say something, but then I walk away.
It's a family podcast,
yeah,
Paul.
But I'm not big enough to fight, as you've mentioned earlier. That I'm, you know, with your height.
I'm still scared of you.
But I don't agree with that, because if this psychology about if you keep doing it, you're going to grind them down and you're going to get, in the end, he'll give you something because he's fed up with you. I think if he's fed up with you, he'll go the other way.
Let's talk about Manchester Man U. You mentioned it a minute ago, David Connolly. They were beaten by Paris Saint-Germain. The game plan was out the window when those two players went off injured. They came back against Chelsea on Monday and they played what to me looked like a diamond formation. I've not seen them play it this season. Maybe some of you guys have, but I certainly haven't. And they were very, very effective. They were very, very good. And we've got to, again, talk about Paul Pogba. Phil Neville this week talked about him being the best player in the Premier League over the last 6 weeks or so. And we can have a debate about it, but he's certainly up there, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what's he got? 7-9 under Solskjaer, something like that. He's their top scorer, top assist maker. They've played a diamond a lot, you know, and it's really worked for them. However, against certain teams that push their fullbacks high, mm-hmm. Tottenham, for example, etc. Look, they came up short against PSG, and I think for the first time, Solskjaer looked a little bit lost on the bench, like he didn't really know what to do. And I think that's understandable because you're now competing at the very, very highest level tactically. And Pochettino last season, I don't know if you remember, they played Juventus and I think Allegri made a couple of tactical changes just to go and win the game. And that is we're now talking at the absolute highest level in football. And I don't think Ollie's quite there yet. But like, I'm not saying he's going to be like Pochettino, but I think, you know, with time, he might, you know, people saying, oh, don't give him a job. He's not, you know, I think he might learn that as a coach. But I think against PSG, he didn't really know what to do for the first time. But I'm hoping that that will come, a bit like it did for Poch.
I just think that happening says a lot, really, because that meant that he did have a plan and things were going well and he had to change it and he didn't have that edge. Where before, under the previous manager, everyone knew how Manchester United were going to play. Mm. It was going to be exorb, bring on Fellaini and hopefully he can nick us a goal. Mm. Now Manchester United have got more match winners and they're on the field because they're always looking to score goals, to make goals, and it's making everyone look better than what they were previous. And he did get caught out of it, but I just think about Ole Gunnar. The good thing is he's got good people surrounding him off the pitch and within the squad, within the coaching staff. Everything is going in the right direction. I think if they go out and get themselves a sporting director, a good one, a respected one, he's the person who can maybe help bring in the top-class players. Because I think Ollie would struggle on his own. As much as he's a big name in Manchester United, scored a winning goal in the cup final, in the Champions League final, they need that little bit more. A player wants a little bit more, wants to know more exactly what line they're going down if they join Manchester United. Mm. They know enough about the club. They need to know whether or not Manchester United are really going to go out there, spend the money, trying to win a Premier League, but more importantly, trying to win a Champions League.
I just wonder as well whether Liverpool are going to do something like PSG did in terms of sitting someone maybe on Pogba. He's that important for them at the minute. You know, would you do that like Marquinhos did? Just, I don't know, whether it's a Henderson, will he get, right, your job is basically track Paul Pogba. You've got to stop him. Because look, he's a big boy. He's a powerful boy. He gets a run on you in the box or gets half a yard, he's going to finish. You saw that against Fulham. We saw that against Chelsea. So
I mean, you are right in what you're saying, but a Henderson can't do that. He just hasn't got the legs. He hasn't got the legs to handle a Pogba. Physically, he might be able to do it for a while, but I just don't think he could handle him legs-wise because Henderson is not an athlete. He gets up and down, but he's not. He can't change pace like a Pogba does.
No, the only thing I'd say is that I think he can trust him, you know, in terms of carrying out that job. He might not have the physical capabilities, but I don't know whether he really could say to Keita, for example, that's your job, or Fabinho. Whereas Jordan Henderson, I think, you know, he's a sort of player that you could, I think, entrust that to him.
One thing that's absolutely for sure, this is going to be a fantastic game of football. Man U on the longest current unbeaten run in the Premier League, 9 games, 8 victories in that time. Liverpool looking to do the double over the Red Devils for the first time since 13-14. Right, that is on Sunday. Plenty more to get through. Next up, I want to talk about Burnley, who take on Tottenham on Saturday early.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Right, let's get to this one. Burnley against Tottenham. The Claretts moving away from the relegation places. Spurs still very much in the mix for the Premier League title. Only Man United are on a longer current unbeaten run in the Premier League than Burnley. 7 games without loss at the moment. Spurs have won 11 away games this season, the best record in the division. We'll park Burnley for a second and start with Tottenham Hotspur. Talk that Harry Kane might be back for next weekend, not this weekend. Dele Alli coming back soon as well, but they don't really need them, do they? Without those two star players, they've found a new way to win, and David Connolly, they're doing exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, look, any side are missing, but actually they've coped really well, won all their games. So, you know, faultless, I think. Again, Mauricio Pochettino finding a way to win, and the likes of Son, even Llorente, you know, when you got those players, Kane, Maurer, you know, Ali, I know he's out as well, when he comes back in. I mean, I tell you what, they've got a real chance in this title race, because they've got to play Chelsea, they've got to play Liverpool, and they've got to play City. Now, they're all away.
They've got to win all those games.
Got to win all those games, but you know what? He finds a way, and you wouldn't put it past them.
And they're a good away side, aren't they? As I've mentioned, they're the best away side in the Premier League this season. They are beating everybody on the road.
Yeah, they are very, very good. I've been there a few times and watched them play Tottenham this season. It's a nightmare getting out of Wembley, though, isn't it? I have to get that one in, by the way.
So they keep moaning about. Why don't you try and build a new ground? Hey?
But, I mean, they're a pleasure to watch when they do play. They're my favourite side to watch in the Premier League because I like the way they play. They're always looking to attack with pass with a purpose. But more than anything, the reason why they're getting by, in my opinion, this season, small squad continuity. And they've built something in an inner self, you know, with nothing phases us. We'll get on with it. We're not going to moan. And I think that stems a little bit from the fact of you haven't spent everybody. And it got on my nerves this summer. And everyone's going, oh, you haven't spent, you're this, you're that, because you haven't spent. You know, why have you always got to spend money all the time? Why, if you've got money, why are you going to keep spending it?
But if they had bought two good players, would they be top of the table right now?
We don't know. But I'll tell you what, they're not moaning now at the moment. Spurs are happy where they are, given the fact of what it's cost them to be where they are at this moment in time. If they'd gone out and spent 200-300 million and they was in the same position, what's the gain there? What is the gain?
Would the gain be the Premier League title?
Possibly. I mean, what Paul says there is there's a lot of truth in that. Small squad, but actually, you've got disciples of Pochettino. That's what he's got now. You know, whether whether he garners that or he only tolerates those players, but he has a core group. And if you're not with them, you know, I've heard he can make grown men cry coming out of his office. You know, he talks a great game, but I've heard he can be absolutely ruthless. And you're either with him or against him.
The players that are with him, they love him.
Absolutely. They go more than the extra yard. And I think that's the key. If you're not with him, you're out of there. You know, we've seen, obviously, certain players just not figuring on the bench. But what he gets from them is just, I don't think any other manager could get the same out of this group of players.
Similar sort of story at Burnley in a way. Players who will run and work and live and die for the manager. It wasn't going great for them for long spells this season. Now they're on that unbeaten run. And I was doing their game against Brighton a couple of weeks ago. And pretty much the entire team was there last season. The star player was young Dwight McNeil, who's come through the academy there. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. Sets up the third goal, I think, in the game. Fantastic performance. And they just literally knock it long to Barnes and Wood. Two or three runners on there, defending really, really well. But they're suddenly performing great. And Tom Heaton as well coming back in makes such a difference.
But they've gone back to basics, Tom. Well, at the start of the season, I saw in West Ham, they were trying to play from the back and playing balls into midfield, and West Ham were just breaking them down. And everywhere they've got, all of a sudden, they've gone back to what they were good at. They actually remembered where it all started from. They've gone back there.
Outworked teams.
Yeah, and then every player now knows his job. He's simplified it. These players are not top quality, what everyone would say, but you can tell them certain bits to do. Don't go too far with them, and you'll be fine. And that's what he's done. he's made their game easier for him.
And he's played two up top, which a lot of teams in the Premier League won't do. You look at Brighton in that game, you know, one up top, basically, they're never going to score. It takes them so long to get in the opposition box. Burnley, ball drops in midfield, bang, hook it on. Go on, you get after that. Two big, strong target men, and they're good, and they can finish, you know. So I don't think the Tottenham centre-halves will be looking forward to this game.
No, it's going to be very, very difficult. But we must say, Spurs have got two decent athletes centre-halves, both... Love can deal with physicality as well, but give them, they'll do the hard work, but when they do get the opportunity, they can play as well. When you talk about two centre-halves who are adaptable, Tottenham have got two of the best ones.
And it's an early kick-off. If they win here, Tottenham, it'll be difficult. If they win, they can put the pressure right back on the others.
I love that Super Jan celebration. Do you love that when he pulls the shirt off and to shoot the Superman thing? That's one of my favourite things. I hope he scores this weekend. Anyway, let's move on. Arsenal against Southampton. Arsenal are beaten in their last 12 Premier League home games, 10 victories in that time. Here's a nice one. Southampton are looking to complete their first league double over Arsenal since 87-88. When they did that, a 17-year-old Alan Shearer scored a hat-trick for the Saints in this very game. Let's talk Arsenal first. It has been a bit doom and gloom for Arsenal in recent times. The injury issues and all the have they got better under Emery? Would Wenger have done any worse than this and all that sort of stuff? But the home form remains very, very solid, doesn't it? Still very, very good. They beat everyone, Dave, at home, don't they?
Yeah, and what's happened in recent weeks, though, the big thing from Arsenal's perspective is Man United have pipped them back into the top four. Because they were a month or so ago, they were looking at that and thinking, well, we just got to finish ahead of Chelsea, basically, and we should be top four. But now, OK, United are back in the picture, and Chelsea are gone. So they've got to keep winning. They've got to win these games. They've got to keep the pressure up, because unless they want to win the Europa League, which is perhaps a possibility, although they did lose 1-0 to Borisov in the first leg of their Europa League game, top four is what they want and what they need.
We are recording this before the Barté-Borisov game, but I was reading, because it's a 5:55 UK time kickoff, they're expecting only about 20,000 in the Emirates Stadium for that game for kickoff, because, you know, it's central London. People are at work, so they can't get there, which, you know, might make that a more difficult match. Depending on, of course, how they get on there is how they might feel about Southampton this weekend. But Southampton got to show some sort of response. The Hasenhüttl kind of revolution was about bringing in youth players, ambitious players, energetic players, and getting them to run and work and fight for the badge, and they were doing that. And then all of a sudden, it stopped working. And, you know, you're losing at home to Cardiff in the last minute. That's going to be tough to recover from, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was a real blow. Obviously, they got back into the game late and then conceded a really bad goal. Stevens giving the ball away in his own half, trying to play out. They've lost Danny Ings. He's injured at probably the worst time. So, really, they're relying on Shane Long. He's got one goal. You know, so if I was a Southampton fan, I'd be thinking, well, why don't we sign a striker in January, you know, dip into the Championship maybe and spend, I don't know, 15, 20 million, because that might keep you up. The way they're going now, they look like there's only one place, and that's down.
Tough game for them this weekend, no doubt about that, against Arsenal. Do you think they'll make it, Southampton? I mean, Danny Ings is a shrewd signing in a lot of ways, but you're never going to get more than 20, 25 games from all season.
No, and there's a lot resting on the likes of Nathan Redmond, who has been terrific.
He's played well, hasn't he?
He has, but they just don't have enough goals from elsewhere. And that's a real worry, because, look, January coming, Carrillo hasn't worked out, Nusi, for example. I think they should have gone and made a signing, because, look, that could arguably be the difference between staying up or going down.
Yeah, they're in it right now in the relegation zone. 18th in the table, 24 points, going up to Crystal Palace in 13th and 27th. So it's very, very tight between a whole bunch of clubs. One club who don't seem to be in that mix because they're pretty much gone is Fulham. They go to West Ham on Friday, 7:45 UK time kickoff. West Ham just one win in seven, so not a given this one for the Hammers. But Fulham on the road this season, just 2 points from the last 45 available. Paul, you're a former Fulham man, of course, and they just simply got to go out and beat West Ham on Friday, I think. They need some unexpected wins from somewhere, and it's the mid-table where you're more likely to pick some points up.
Well, I think you use that word unexpected, because I think it will be. Every game they go into, there's no belief from anybody that Fulham can win it. And after seeing them a few times this season, home and away, you have to believe that isn't going to happen, because you just don't see enough there. I thought that they might have done something better in January. I thought I might have seen a few more resilient players come in, but it didn't really materialise. There was talk of Drinkwater and even Danny Simpson coming in, because there's a big problem with Cyrus Christie at right back. You just know he's not fancied. But it hasn't really happened. So as a lot of Fulham fans, they would look at it and go, this isn't going to happen this season. They come up and there was a lot of belief that they were going to stay up with the football they played. Mm. They tried it, didn't work because they tried to play it with not top players in the top division. Great in the Championship, playing from the byline and trying to get the other end. Work to a point, but when you go and when you try it in the Premier League and it doesn't work, then you have to do something else. Jukanovic would not change. Big injury problems defensively, never sorted out. Went and brought defenders, but they couldn't play in that fashion he wanted. So Fulham are down as far as I'm. You just can't see anything. They've got one player who everything's. Is all around, centres around, is Mitrovic. And he gives everything. But even now, you're starting to see him now. He's showing that side of him where you just know he's starting to bite back at things. Where before, he was very disciplined in what he'd done. He's willing to take a bash if someone's willing to accept what he's going to give. And he'll go with it. But now, he's starting to now get a little bit feisty now because he's totally frustrated.
I just think that they've actually made the wrong managerial move. They selected Ranieri, I think, to try and carry on maybe the philosophy of Jukanovic, but actually they needed a firefighter to keep him up. I mean, those players couldn't play the way that I think Jukanovic wanted to play in the Premier League, and they just brought someone in just to continue playing the same way. And to me, they should have been more direct, played in the opposition half. They're playing in completely the wrong areas. Defensively, they're all over the place. I'm not saying they should have got a Big Sam, but, you know, they needed a firefighter to come in and play the ugly way.
Well, he's the firefighter, isn't he?
And just keep
you
them
are
in,
saying they should have got Big Sam.
Mate, possibly. Just keep them in the league. Because, they've actually just continued trying to play out, as I said. And it's just not that the players that they have aren't good enough to do that. And there's only one. They're down, that's it.
What about the hierarchy at Fulham and the way they've handled the last 18 months or so with Jukanovic going, Ranieri coming in, but also the $100 million odd they spent during the summer, the fact that they got up with a bunch of low knees that they weren't going to stay at the club. You know, Alfie Mawson coming in, I think we had Chris Perry on this show saying he's the worst defender in the Premier League last season, and he's coming for £20 odd million. I mean, how much blame can they take? Can we blame Jukanovic, Ranieri and the players, or should the people running the club take a lot of responsibility for how bad this season has been?
They have to, because that this isn't the first time that they've had problems with the recruitment side of things. There were rumblings in Championship seasons gone by where Jukanovic wasn't happy. There was talk that he was going to walk out, that he was going to leave because of disagreements with the way that the players are recruited. I think it was Shai Khan's son is involved in the recruitment of the players, and you know they've recruited some good players, but you look at to get them up. But look at the players they recruited in the summer. What's the strategy? Yeah. And there was no harmony there, and they just chucked a load of money at it, and it's going to cost them big time.
Well, I mean, look, they obviously had Matt Target. They couldn't get a deal over the line for him. That meant they were left short with a left-back. Sessegnon, you know, probably a bit inexperienced, so he plays higher up. Callum Chambers they brought in, but again, he's played holding midfield, then at the back. I mean, they've just had square pegs and round holes the whole time. Tried a back four, tried a back three. They've tried everything, and it just hasn't worked for them.
I don't get the Callum Chambers thing at all. They're playing Dennis Adoy as part of a two or a three, who we've said a few times now, I don't want to keep singing this guy out, but he is absolutely useless. Like, dreadful footballer, and yet they've got a centre-half who can play there, playing in midfield, and they've got holding midfielders, you know, like McDonald at the club. You might not think he's great, but he's an actual holding midfielder who can do it. And yet he's not getting in the holding midfield role because they're playing a defender there. You know, little things like that don't make any sense to me.
Well, they're playing Tom Kearney in wide positions, and Tom Kearney's not blessed with great pace. Good footballer. I mean, I was at the game, I'd just been there, and they got Manchester United game.
3-0, yeah.
Yeah, they bring him on, and he made a difference when he come on because he gets on the ball and he runs with it, he can see a pass, and he keeps it. He doesn't very rarely gives the ball away, but he doesn't get a game. And Callum Chambers, you talk about Callum Chambers, and everywhere he's gone as a defender, he's been quite poor, to be perfectly honest. So instead of putting him in defence where he generally might make a mistake and cost a goal, they've got him in a position where he can defend. The problem is when they've got the ball, he's the last person you want to have the ball with time on it. That's the problem. He comes in, he'll pull it in behind, play one touch and knock it in behind, and he'll make tackles, he'll win headers. But when they've got time, he's not the ideal person you want in that midfield with the ball.
On West Ham, not won a game since they beat Arsenal on the 12th of January. Got knocked out the FA Cup by Wimbledon in this run as well. Should have lost against Crystal Palace. They were great first half, but second half, Palace could have scored 5 or 6. The chances were crazy that they had in the end. 33 points, they're not going to go down, but at the moment they just feel like they're listing a bit, David Connolly.
Yeah, they are, and I guess I'm sure Arnautovic will come in for this game. I'm sure he'll start. He's back on track now. But they should be up there catching the likes of Wolves. There's no way that they should be finishing behind Wolves, even though Wolves have spent an awful lot of money doing great. That should be the sort of finishing position they should be aiming for. To me, with the players they got, the money they spent, this season hasn't been good enough.
Yeah, sitting 10th at the moment. Big game for Fulham that Friday, 7:45 UK time kickoff. Right, plenty more to get through. Another game on Friday up next as Cardiff take on Watford. Right, Len, let's talk Cardiff up against Watford. 7:45 kickoff on Friday. Cardiff looking to win three consecutive top flight games for the first time since 1961. Watford have shored it up at the back in recent weeks. They've kept a clean sheet in three of their last four Premier League matches and got victory against Queen's Park Rangers in the FA Cup on Friday just gone. Let's talk a bit about Cardiff City, because I think all of us thought that they were going to be relegated come the end of this season, and yet they've had, of course, the tragedy around the club in the last couple of weeks. But moving away from that and talking about on the pitch, they outplayed Bournemouth and they outfought Southampton and now out of the relegation places. It's an incredible turnaround, really.
It is. And look, they've had a really emotional rollercoaster time. Didn't have a lot of the ball against Southampton, but Warnock, you've got to be given credit. He made two changes and they worked. He took off Bobby Reid, brought on powerful Kenneth Zahor. He won themselves a corner. Obviously, delivery came in and they scored. And to me, he seems like he's... although maybe he might have accepted a point, for example, away from him, he went for the win because I think he knows. And a bit, you know, you've got to give credit to those sort of managers, maybe like a Dyche, who realises, you know what, at times we're going to have to be a bit direct, a bit British, you know, yeah, and try and get 3 points, because there's no point, you know, maybe just trying to take one. At this moment in time, three makes an awful lot of difference. So real credit to them. And I tell you what, the way they're going, they just show character. And you know, a lot of the sides maybe in and around them really haven't. So you think that they might have a good chance.
If we went down to a final day and Cardiff needed something on the final day to stay up, and in that team there's Harry Arter, there's Joe Rawls, there's Callum Patterson, there's real fighters in there, and they're
Bennett,
up against
Bennett, the left back.
Bennett, there's so many in there. Sol Bamba. I mean, you can go through the entire team, really. So many players that will just grind it out till the end. They need a point, and they're up against someone like Newcastle, or up against someone like Crystal Palace, even Southampton. You know, guys who are a great 1 week, terrible the next. I think I'd back Cardiff to get what they needed to stay in the division.
No, I have to agree with you. I never thought I'd be actually saying that I believe that could happen, but the way they've gone, I saw them at Crystal Palace. And where I fancied Palace, but then Palace do struggle to score at home. But Palace still dominated them, but they still showed a resilience which suggested that they were always going to be in for the fight. And I think there was everyone bankers to go down, because Neil Warnock's record gives you that opportunity to say that, because he's just not good in top flight. But I think he's gone a little bit, you know, he's gone against the grain at the moment in time, and it seems like they're going to stay up.
Could be a crowning achievement for Neil Warnock. On Watford through to the last eight of the FA Cup, some really professional performances in recent weeks.
Yeah, especially last week in the FA Cup. Wasn't the best match, but they did what they needed to do. Scrappy goal, scrappy performance, got through in the quarter-final now against Crystal Palace, who beat Watford in the semi-final a couple of years ago. And I'm dreading the game, to be honest with you. I'm dreading it. Even though we've beaten them twice already this season, I can just see Zaha having a day against us and winning. But this game, the weekend, is an interesting one. Difficult one. We've not got a great record over there in recent times. And as you said, they're playing a lot better. They seem to have picked up some momentum, Cardiff, over recent weeks for a variety of reasons. And as a Watford fan, I'm looking at this game on a Friday night. I'm thinking, I'll take a point all day long at this stage.
Well,
they got a good three against Everton, you've got to say. Yeah. And the goal was so well crafted. The little ball from Cathcart round the corner
was
absolutely exquisite. Great ball in from Will Hughes. And I think, look, they've got tough games coming up. They've got Liverpool, Man City. So I think they probably would like to take something from this game, even though it's away from home.
Yeah.
As I was saying, 37 points now. Three more is 40. They can forget about the league then and try and win the FA Cup. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Let's move on. Bournemouth against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. Bournemouth, such a basket case of a club at times. They've won their last two home league games by an aggregate score of 6-0, including thumping Chelsea in that time, outplaying West Ham 2. Wolverhampton Wanderers, another team through to the last eight of the FA Cup, won three of their last five Premier League away games. You know, two teams that love to play football, two teams that will go out and attack this game. And I think Paul Parker, in many ways, it's the toughest game of the weekend to predict. So do that for us.
Oh, my God. Seriously, I mean, it is a tough one to call with Bournemouth the way they are, but then you look at Wolves, and Wolves can go out on a day and beat anyone in the Premier League. They had a little bit of good fortune with the goal they scored against City at the top of the season. But other than that, when you see them against...
Bit of fortune, the goal they scored against Newcastle as well, wasn't it?
Okay,
you can blindfold the goalkeeper before you score. It'll work out quite nicely for all of us.
But you watch Wolves play and the football they play. I mean, they did it last season in the Championship. They brought that into the Premier League and they've got some really good players. They are bringing in some unbelievable players who are making them names for themselves in the Premier League. And you can see them progressing. They're a club that is going to keep going forward. And they're not in a false position this moment in time where they are. It's fantastic what they've done. Can they go there and win? I believe they can. I really do believe they can go there because we see Bournemouth defensively. They're very, very poor. For me, the only success story for Bournemouth is a young lad, Brooks.
Mm.
He is an incredible player who will not be there next season.
This is a case of the sort of rare, lesser-spotted mid-table six-pointer.
Yeah.
Because they're both going for seventh place and currently Wolves are 6 points ahead of Bournemouth. Bournemouth can claw it back. If Wolves win this, you know, they'll be looking back at that pack and think we've got a real chance of finishing seventh.
I think they're lucky they actually had decent wins against West Ham and Chelsea, Bournemouth, because their form since November has been atrocious. They've lost 11, lost 8 straight away from home. You know, any time they're away from home, you think it's a banker to the other side. And I think it's a good job they got those 6 points. If they didn't, they'd be right down with the others, really struggling.
Look,
they missed Callum Wilson and David Brooks.
He's out this weekend, both out this weekend. Likely that Junior Stanislas will miss this one as well. Of course, Lewis Cook, Charlie Daniels, Simon Francis. A decent injury list for a squad the size of Bournemouth. One quick line on Wolves. They've used fewer players than any other team this season. Just 18 in the Premier League, which maybe goes to show why they've had that on-field consistency. Let's move on. Newcastle against Huddersfield is Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. Newcastle looking to win 3 consecutive home league games for the first time since 2018, April 2018. Huddersfield
Town. And they're
going to do it. Yeah, lost 12 of the last 13. And it's tough. These kind of games are tough, though, aren't they? Because Huddersfield are so down and so awful. You know, they probably will get an extra point that puts them above Derby's 11-point level at some point. Don't know when, but they probably will get a draw somewhere along the line, so they're not the worst team in Premier League history. But irrespective of that, they are the worst team in Premier League history. And that's tough right now for teams to go up against, because you expect to win. Even Newcastle would expect to win this. And imagine it's 85 minutes in, you've not scored against Huddersfield. You know, I've been a fan of a club in that position. You're going mad thinking, if we can't beat this lot, then what's wrong with us? Huge for Newcastle.
I mean, look, against Arsenal, it was fairly comfortable, but they still had opportunities, Huddersfield, to get in behind, but just their final pass was so poor. And they've only got Aaron Moy. Without him, I mean, they've got basically nothing. So I'd say, yes, this is a home banker. I think the fans will get behind their club here. I hope he doesn't just play one up top, as he has done, you know, in a back five or three into a five.
But he will, though, won't he? Like, he's not going to play two up front here, is he?
Well, I don't think I just like him to hopefully play a little bit more attacking football. Look, Longstaff's come in and he's done great, but it's not going to be a game for the purists, this one.
Yeah, I like Longstaff. Good to see someone like from the area playing for Newcastle. There's something magical about that. I love it when that happens for teams, and I'm loving that. I think he's absolutely fantastic.
If only we could show you the look on Paul Parker's face at the moment. You're not looking forward to watching this one, are you?
No, not even watching. I don't even want to talk about it. As soon as he said that, it just didn't entertain me. I completely switched off. And Dave's saying about Benitez, about one up front. He's not going to change, is he? He did it at Liverpool, didn't he? He was very negative. And the top players were getting him out of trouble. He's gone to Newcastle and he's just making it plainly obvious to everybody, trying to say, I want this, I want that. You're not giving me it, so I'm just going to deliver you that. And that's what he does. He's just giving you something.
Well, one player that might rev your engines for this one, we've got to mention Miguel Almirón, who made his debut against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Played for about 10-15 minutes. Looked very bright, very alert, very pacey. Potentially a starter in this game, having had a bit of time to bed in for Newcastle United. And I tell you, we've got a lot of listeners in America to this programme. Everyone is very excited to see how this guy does.
Yeah, I mean, he's expensive. He might need time to sort of acclimatise. I don't think they've really got that much time. A gentle introduction. I imagine this will be a game he should definitely be starting.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect start. I like him. I think he could do really, really well. Right, let's move on. One final game we've not mentioned this weekend. Leicester against Crystal Palace is 5:30 UK time on Saturday. Get excited, Paul. It's going to be a good one, all right. Crystal Palace, they just love playing Leicester. It's a weird situation. They've won each of their last 3 Premier League games against Leicester by an aggregate score of 9-0. Can I just ask you all about Wilfried Zaha? We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. Crystal Palace pulled a fast one there on the FA, didn't they? When he got banned for clapping the official, and they appealed that after the first game ban, so he could play against West Ham, star against West Ham, but then took the second ban, or second part of that ban, against Doncaster in the Cup, so he could play in the Premier League game and not in the game their second team would have won or probably could have won anyway. I feel like they've really got away with that. It's really annoyed me that they've been able to do that.
It's not their fault, though, is it? They've taken advantage of a loophole in the rules, so good luck to them. It's the FA's problem. The FA shouldn't allow that
but
to
doesn't
happen.
But doesn't it annoy you a little bit? I'm not saying, all right, it's not Crystal Palace's fault or
it
anything.
Does.
But
it does, but...
Why can't they have convened that meeting almost immediately? What took 10 days about it?
A word of the FA, mate.
Well, I'm hoping someone from the FA is listening.
We saw it at Ramos as well, didn't we? In terms of, you know...
Shall I get booked?
Shall I get booked? I mean, it's just tactical, and I think it's worked in their favour, and you've got to say that it worked well.
Yeah. I suppose so. Crystal Palace away from home, very, very good. Won a lot of big games this year on the road. They have struggled at home at times, but away, we saw against Doncaster as well in the Cup. We've seen at Wolverhampton Wanderers this year, and many other times away from home, they're a very, very good side. Yeah. Of course, Man City.
But they could do with a win here just to keep that distance away, because they're not far off. It would take a Southampton win, a Cardiff win, Newcastle win, three things which not necessarily all going to happen at once, but it doesn't take much across a weekend for them to be right above the bottom three, if not even in it. You know, soon. So they do need some points.
I mean, if you're going to look at most sides and you're going to ask a question who you think won't go down, who you think shouldn't go down, because what they are, it's Crystal Palace. Yeah. They are much better than what the league suggests at this moment in time.
Their wage bill is much bigger than being in a relegation spot.
They should be better, but they are, as you say, away from home, and they're going to go to Leicester. And Leicester, you still don't know what you're getting with Leicester. Is the manager going to make so many changes? Is he going to drop Vardy? Leicester can only play one way, and if Vardy's not on the pitch, they've got a problem. The manager has to play in a way to suit Vardy. When he tries to play football and tries to play it through with Vardy there, it isn't going to work. So they're not going to mix it up. Their best football at the moment is Maddison, and he keeps taking him off.
When they're chasing a goal, he's taking
him off. I find it really strange what's happening now. Madison's another player who I believe will move to maybe a bigger club. So he can, then you'll see how good he really is. Because, I mean, he's a good player now, very good at Norwich last season. He's proved himself, in my opinion, already in what he's done with Leicester. That next step for him is an important one.
I think he's similar to Brooks. They've both been brilliant, come up from the Championship. But Zaha should be having a similar effect as Maddison. I mean, he's only scored a couple of goals this season, Zaha. They've been heavily reliant on the likes of Townsend. He's got to do more. If he's their main man, he's got to start producing, Wilf.
Yeah, I actually think Andros Townsend's their main man. I think he's been fantastic for a long, long time now. Some great goals as well. Another assist against Doncaster as well. I think he's their top assist maker and second top scorer, something like that. Fantastic season. Briefly, Crystal Palace manager Roy Hodgson, 71 and 198 days he'll be on Saturday, making him the oldest person to take charge of a Premier League game. How long can he go on for? Another 10 years? Four more years of Roy? I mean, it's an incredible, incredible career he's had, and it's going so well for him right now at Palace. Why not carry on?
He's showing no sign of stopping. He's still enjoying it. It's probably one of those situations where if you are 71 and you're in such a high-profile job, you probably don't want to stop because you're probably fearful of what happens when you do stop.
Yeah, very true. You know?
End up here, talking to us, for almost no money. Yeah. And on that, we've run out of money to pay you two, so we're going to end the show. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the preview show again and enjoying our jibes. We are back with another show next week.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.